Good morning, Your Honor. Leon Hazani and Neville Asherson for petitioner.
Good morning, Your Honor.
I'll be arguing the case, Your Honor.
Well, for some reason they're both there?
Well, Your Honor, I may well add something to the argument.
Well, then after your co-counsel is through, if he leaves you some time, you can come up.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honors. May I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal time?
You only have 10 minutes. You
want two minutes, please, Your Honor. May I begin, Your Honors?
Yes, please.
I believe that we have a very compelling case here before the court involving the petitioner, who's a political activist, a fighter against corruption, and an active political person in Armenia who fought against corruption and paid for it very dearly. He was beaten repeatedly, tortured, interrogated, arrested, forced via violence to give up his political opinions. When he refused to do that, he was tortured further, hospitalized, and ultimately fled to the United States for safety.
If we accept all that, how do you respond to the changed country conditions conclusion by the IJ?
Well, Your Honor, I think that there's a two-prong answer to that. First, I don't believe that the IJ, that petitioner per se has to show that changed the country conditions hadn't changed. The reason I state that is because the
don't you have to show that factual determination is not supported by substantial evidence?
First, Your Honor, I do believe that it is supported by substantial evidence, but I don't think
the country conditions have changed.
That they haven't changed, and I don't think that it's required in this case. The reason I say it's not required is because...
Counsel, you've got me totally confused. I thought that the IJ made a determination, first, of adverse credibility. But even if we assume that he was wrong on the adverse credibility determination, the IJ said it's safe for him to return. Country conditions have changed. Now, the question is, what is the petitioner's obligation on appeal to get us to grant relief in the face of that factual determination? What does he have to show?
Your Honor, I believe that if you take a look at the immigration judge's decision, which was in part adopted by the BIA, the immigration judge denied asylum in two ways. First, it denied asylum on the basis that his past persecution wasn't severe enough so that even if there's no well-founded fear of future persecution, that he should still be entitled to stay here because the past persecution was so severe that he has a reason not to want to return.
Okay, I understand all that. Would you go to the second prong? The question I'm asking you is the future, changed country conditions.
As to the second prong, Your Honor, I don't believe that – I believe that he created a well-founded fear. When he established the past persecution, assuming he's found credible, he establishes past persecution. The burden shifts to the government to rebut a presumption of future persecution.
And the IJ apparently concluded that the government had met its burden because he reached the determination that country conditions had changed. And I'm still waiting for an answer to my question.
Yes,
what does he have to show in the face of that determination in order to show entitlement to relief at the Court of Appeal?
I believe that the finding by the immigration judge wasn't supported by the documentation that was submitted.
The claim is that there's not substantial evidence to support that factual determination.
Yes.
Thank you.
The reason I bring up the other point is because the immigration judge used the erroneous adverse credibility determination to find that he didn't warrant asylum in the United States based upon his past the severity of his past persecution alone, and then required the petitioner to produce medical documentation to support his claim because she had used faulty interpretation, a due process violation, and other really very, very minor issues to make an adverse credibility determination. If one is to look at the IJ's decision, the IJ says, because I find him to be uncredible, I needed medical evidence to support this past persecution.
Did the translation issues impact on the evidence about the changed country conditions at all?
I believe that it impacted the entire proceedings. Even
did
the
he testify about changed country conditions?
He testified that although the names had changed, the players had stayed the same, and the corruption and the political violence and political persecution continued in Armenia. That was supported by the 2001 country conditions report produced by the Department of State, which the government put in.
That testimony was pretty clear, wasn't it?
I believe so, Your Honor. I would also
it wasn't really affected by the translation. You have an independent argument on changed country conditions. I think what Judge Wilkin was asking you is that independent argument that there was not a change in country conditions, is that affected by your argument that as to translation problems?
Well, I believe that may have been. The BIA fled from the faulty translation argument. They themselves refused to adopt the attack on the faulty translations regarding the organizational names. And in doing so, they effectively said, okay, we're going to be able to carve out where there was faulty translation and where there wasn't. And I don't see how a judicial body can say, well, we'll say that this portion of the proceedings was affected by faulty translation, but this portion wasn't. Once there was a finding, a faulty interpretation, rather, the finding should have required, at the very least, remand, if not a finding that he was, in fact, credible and warranted the relief.
Are you giving any time to your co-counsel?
I did have one other question, though. I'm unclear as to how he got into the United States. It said he came on a visitor's visa, and yet there seems to be this argument that he came on a fraudulent marriage or a marriage of convenience. Which was it, or was it both?
Your Honor, I believe that if one was to take a look at the asylum application and the evidence that was presented, the petitioner came in on an H-4 visa based upon a marriage which he admitted from the get-go in the proceedings what was entered into for the purpose of fleeing the country. It wasn't a case where he received a green card or became a lawful permanent resident through the marriage. He was able to enter the United States on that visa, but
a visitor visa,
I believe, may have come into the record due to the faulty interpretation. But if one was to take a look at the asylum application and the documents submitted in support, he came in on an H-4 visa, which he testified to and his family testified to the fact that he obtained through the marriage, which was arranged only for him to flee the country.
What's an H-4 visa?
An H-4 visa is a visa, I believe, for the dependent of someone who's coming as a specialty worker. It's another category of a non-immigrant visa, Your Honor.
And it's a temporary visa?
A temporary visa, yes.
What do we do with the discrepancy on the asylum application that he was widowed versus his testimony that he'd entered into a sham marriage? And presumably his wife is still alive.
Well, the point I would make in that regard is this, Your Honor. First of all, I don't think that it's a major discrepancy. And the judge...
My wife is dead versus...
Major to the wife.
I think it's not material to the claim for asylum.
Isn't it kind of important in the... credibility determined?
I don't think it is, Your Honor, because here the immigration judge speculated that the reason he put her down as widowed on the application was because he was trying to cover up a fraud. That flies.
Was he asked about the discrepancy by the immigration judge?
Not specifically. He openly.
When you say not specifically, was he yes or no? Was he asked about the discrepancy?
Yes.
Did the immigration judge say to him, "Can you explain why you said widowed?"
Yes. But only
where? Tell me where in the transcript.
No, the judge didn't ask that specific question, Your Honor.
He didn't ask that question, right?
Yes.
Did he ask him to explain the discrepancy?
No.
Okay, that's what I thought the answer was. Not yes, but no. It
yes.
Gotten the entire range.
Well, the petitioner openly stated, including his mother and father from the get-go of the proceedings, that the marriage was entered into for the purpose of him to flee the country. So if anything, even if there was a fraud in this case, it was recanted immediately. And I think that the petitioner coming into court and testifying, look, I entered into this marriage for this purpose, and his mother and father doing the same, isn't a material misrepresentation. I think it would speak more clearly to perhaps clerical error or some type of misunderstanding rather than fraud. He came into court.
The devil made me do it.
Right. He never hid the ball on this issue, Your Honor.
Part of the range of explanations. Okay. You saved 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, my name is Ryan Bounds. I will represent the respondent in this matter, the Attorney General of the United States. I'd like to correct a couple of misrepresentations that the Petitioner's Counsel made in his opening argument. First, it is not the case that the petitioner here came forward and admitted his misrepresentation of his marital status on the I-589. He did admit that he was not widowed but divorced, but he did not admit that the marriage that he had entered into was for fraudulent purposes until he was pressed upon it when it became clear rather late in his testimony that he had entered into this marriage without having met the woman before and while he was still in the hospital. So
he volunteered that. Nobody said, what kind of marriage was this? Was it, why did you get married?
He didn't volunteer it. In fact, it was asked, how did you marry someone who were still in the hospital?
Yeah.
And then
and
he said, I had no other choice. I was leaving.
Right.
But it wasn't the case that he misrepresented his marital status on his I-589. And he admitted that that was misrepresented, but he never admitted.
Where did he admit something?
He said he was widowed, when in fact at the time he was still married.
Where did he say, I misrepresented something on the form?
He did not until he was pressed on.
No. Where did he say, yes, I misrepresented something on the form?
I'm not sure that he ever admitted it in so many words.
There was never any reference to the form in the hearing.
That's not true. He was asked why he said he was widowed in his form by the representative of
where
the
is
INS.
That?
I don't have the page citation. I can look for it.
No, not a case citation.
Let me help you both. Transcript 67 and 68. It's ER 148 and 49 is when he's cross-examined by the IR or the INS counsel. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
You are? What does it say?
The INS counsel, as best I can recall off the top of my head, is why he had indicated that he was widowed.
Go right ahead. Just start there.
Okay.
Anyway, to continue.
Yes, tell me that. Do you have the transcript?
I can get it.
Okay. All right. Now, tell me where you took a look at the pages 67. No, it's 148, 149. And tell me where he was asked about why he said he was widowed, why he put something on the form, or how he explains the discrepancy.
He only explains why he undertook the discrepancy in his briefing court.
I asked you about the hearing. At the hearing, he was not asked by the IJ or any attorney, how do you explain the discrepancy between the form and your testimony about the marriage?
I may be misrecollecting. The explanation may only have been in the briefing, but he did address the discrepancy.
In the briefing? I'm not interested in the briefing. We do have a rule, as you may know, that for credibility finding, to rely on it, if you rely on a discrepancy, you have to give the witness an opportunity to explain the discrepancy.
Very well. I will note that there is no dispute. The only excuse that the petitioner has offered, even in his briefing, which goes to the prejudice analysis, is that he was advised to lie on the form I-589 by a non-lawyer. And
is
that
there any
he
law?
Then, pardon? He then says that he corrected it at his hearing, but he did not, in fact, correct it at his hearing. He admitted that he was not widowed and that he was, in fact, divorced, but only recently, when he was, in fact, married, not widowed, when he filled out that form I-589. And he did not admit that the reason he had made that misrepresentation was because he was afraid of having his fraudulent marriage discovered, ever.
Is there any law on the question of, let's say hypothetically, that someone really was in legitimate fear of his life and then lied on a form to save his life? Way does that cut, in other words?
This court has recognized that fraudulent documentation used to enter the United States in flight from persecution will not always be a grounds for an adverse credibility determination. In this case, however, the form 589 was filled out 3 years after he'd entered the United States. So this is not exactly flight from persecution. It was also filled out on the advice of someone, and the erroneous misrepresentation was not ever corrected in a forthcoming way, as the Petitioner's Counsel attempted to represent in his opening argument.
Let's get for a moment, at least, to the changed country conditions, which Judge Tallman asked your opponent about. On page 13 and 14, no, page 13, I guess, of the IJ's report, it starts at 13.
Of the oral decision?
Of the oral decision. The court notes that there has been changed circumstances. And then he gives two reasons. He says, one, that the man who was the president of his organization now supports Mr. Karcharian's government. And two, that the ANM is no longer in existence.
Correct, Your Honor.
Now, can you tell me how that differs from the case of Melkonian and the country reports in that case?
Melkonian, or are you talking about Mamouzian?
Is it Mamouzian?
This is Melkonian.
There
is a Melkonian case, okay, but it's not this one.
Yeah.
You're talking about Mamouzian, I presume?
Yeah, Mamouzian.
That was a decision that you wrote in 2004, as I recall, and that case did represent, did relate to country conditions in Armenia. The only difference there is that because of the timing of that case, the court was relying on 1998 country condition reports.
But wasn't the president changed by then?
He was forced to resign in 1998, as the country conditions report that is relevant to this case notes.
Yeah.
And
so
the ANM
was no longer in existence at the time of the other case, Mamouzian.
It was no longer in existence when you wrote your decision for the court in Mamouzian.
Yeah.
It was in existence in 1998, which was the year the country condition report related to for purposes of that case. This hearing was held in 2002, so we're dealing with the 2001 country conditions report,
yes,
which represents the ANM had been disbanded and the president had been forced to resign. And in fact, the petitioner, in his oral testimony to the IJ, acknowledged that the ANM was no longer in power, acknowledged that the president was no longer there, and in fact said that the country conditions had changed a lot. So he could not represent which party the president of Armenia belonged to now.
I've looked at the country reports, and they sound almost identical as to the problems that exist. The one says arbitrary arrests and detention without warrants are common, and members of the security force routinely beat detainees between arrest and interrogation. The other one, the current one that we're talking about, says members of the security forces routinely beat detainees during arrest and interrogation. That's word for word. Arbitrary arrest and detention is a problem.
The petitioner in this case.
First, I mean, we go to one.
I don't want to be in Armenia any more than you do. I'm not going to argue it's a lovely country. That's not the basis of persecution. The petitioner's argument is he was persecuted because of his activities on behalf of a democratic organization, be it NPO or NDU. And now the country conditions, whatever the country conditions report samples that you want to cite from, are such that the head of that organization that he was a member of and that was the basis of his alleged persecution now supports the government. And he admits that. And so I don't quite understand how the court can rely on, you know, citations from a country conditions report say it's the same. And, in fact, his own organization would not say so.
Well, he said, though, that the people who were persecuting him, who had previously been members of the party that no longer existed, still had positions in government.
He actually does not say that. He makes a conclusory statement without any expansion. I'm not sure what he means by the people are still the same. Those same people.
We don't know what he means by anything at all since the translator was so faulty.
He says that the people are still the same. Those people may still be in Armenia. He also acknowledges, however, the government has changed. He acknowledges that the president and head of the ANM, which is what he was fleeing, no longer is in power. He acknowledges that the head of his organization supports the current president. The country conditions report makes quite clear that the head of the Internal Affairs Ministry, which is the ministry that allegedly persecuted him, has been tried and convicted of murder. There is no doubt that the people are not the same. And he acknowledges himself that the country conditions have changed, quote, quite a lot or a lot. So he could not say which party the president now in power belongs to. So we cannot credit his summary, conclusory, unexpanded statement that the people are the same.
Speaking of crediting, when it sort of struck me that the BIA was kind of striking the comments that the IJ had made about the mistakes and the acronyms and so on.
Yes.
But then, I guess, sort of made its own independent finding that even without that grounds for credibility that the IJ arguably relied on, that they would make their own decision that he was not credible based on the remaining grounds.
Grounds. Not quite right. What they said was that the IJ based the adverse credibility determination on a number of factors. The IJ did not need to rely on the factors of the apparent misrepresentation or the apparent mistranslation of the Armenian political party names into English abbreviations. And so they said,
can
even
the
without
BIA
that,
make separate credibility determinations?
And you are reviewing the decision as rendered by the BIA.
Well, I'm afraid, have time to review the five or six items.
Can I just say in parting that
You've talked about one, the widowed, which he wasn't given a chance to explain, and which may or may not be material to his fear, or central to his claim, as we say. Is there any other principal one that you think shows lack of credibility?
Yes, his failure to describe in any meaningful detail his duties on behalf of the democratic organization that he represented, his misrepresentation of his leadership role or his evasiveness about his leadership role, and as the IJ specifically noted, his tendency to exaggerate or shade the truth on what his actions were. So he said he went to make a complaint to the DA about his mistreatment in 1993, even though he was still in the hospital, and when that was pointed out, he admitted he didn't do it, his friends did. The IJ noted that.
If I say I went to federal court, when somebody says to me, I'm a businessman, and I feel I'm cheated, and I say, well, what did you do about that? And you say, I went to federal court. Does that mean you went personally rather than you had somebody file a claim?
I went to file a complaint.
No, I didn't went to file a complaint.
That's what he said.
He
didn't say, I went to the DA or, you know, I had my day in court or any other such idiom. He said, I went to file a complaint with the DA.
Or he said something that caused the translator who had difficulties to translate it in that way.
I do want to emphasize that the petitioner himself has never, and certainly never before the IJ or the board, nor did his counsel ever say that the translator was having problems. The petitioner was asked and specifically said he understood the translator, and the petitioner, even before the board, only said that the translator was having problems translating Armenian political party names into English abbreviations. There was no claim, there has never been any claim, that there were, you know, general mistranslations, and there's no basis for making that determination.
Well, there's one I remember at some length about when he was trying to explain what his job was, and he said, plenipotentiary, they took a representative, and then they took a recess, and the translator came back and said, I think he's saying plenipotentiary. So there was at least that, I certainly know.
There was some to and fro about what exactly his title was for the organization, but that does not go to sort of the general ability to represent his quotidian activities on behalf of the organization or any of the injuries that he suffered or any of thing like that. So I don't think that that quite rises to the level of pervasive translation errors. No such errors were ever claimed, and this court has specifically held, as Perez Laster in 2000 noted, that isolated translation errors do not give rise to a due process violation, which is what the petitioner is now arguing, in order to avoid the consequences of having failed to challenge the IJ's changed country conditions analysis.
His exact response was, did you report this incident to anybody? Yes, I went to the DA on January 30th.
Yes. And that is obviously not the only ground for the adverse credibility determination, but it is one of them. The overall tone, the IJ is in a position to evaluate the credibility of the witness in the first instance, and the IJ noted that based on that sort of exaggeration and shading, other instances of evasiveness and lack of detail, that the petitioner was not credible.
They all sound, you know, fine when you talk about them generally. But, for instance, the IJ says his testimony is evasive, but doesn't report the question asked correctly. The question was not what parts of your body were treated, as the IJ said, but what were you treated for in the hospital? And the answer to that question was, you know, I was treated for injuries to various parts of my body and I had a concussion and loss of memory. And he finds that evasive.
He was asked, I can't remember if it was by representatives of the INS or by the immigration judge or even by his own counsel, but there were efforts to get from him specific enumerations of his injuries, and he basically resorted to, obviously,
the only
all
question
over.
I see that asked for that is, what were you treated for in the hospital? And I found that answer not only not evasive, quite specific. And I could go down the list with you as to the things that the IJ said were evasive.
Well, I would urge the court not to lose sight of the fact that even if he were the most credible witness under the sun, country conditions have changed in Armenia, and he has not challenged it, and this court has no jurisdiction to consider whether he has challenged the changed country conditions. So he could be credible and still not have shown his...
Absolutely. Those are two separate arguments, yes. And he has to prevail on both.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And he also has to show that he raised it sufficiently in his...
Exactly.
...with the BIA.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, if I can just rush through a few issues. First of all, I believe that the government misrepresented this case in regards to the interpreter. Even the BIA essentially refused to adopt portions of the IJ's decision because of an interpreter problem. Those are at several places, but just in the administrative record on page 123, the interpreter didn't know the difference between what a mayor was or the district attorney.
Is there any forum in which the petitioner could have come forward and said, oh, by the way, when I was translated as saying this, what I really said was that, and it should have been translated as the other?
In fact, the issue was raised by family members during the proceedings.
I know, but afterwards. Could he have actually quarreled afterwards with a translation and said, no, what I really said was this?
Well, this is all orally done. He doesn't understand English. His family members who spoke Armenian were excluded from the proceedings. He doesn't know what was...
Later, at some point, he saw the transcript, and someone could have translated it to him, and he could have then said, that isn't actually what I said. Was there any forum in which he could have made that correction?
Well, I believe he attempted to make that correction at the BIA. I think the BIA agreed with him, but then refused to do the appropriate thing, which was to remand for a new proceeding or to reverse the credibility determination. And the credibility determination is based on these faulty interpretations. I think it's, laughable that the government's position, hinges on semantics such as, I went to the DA, when the faulty interpretation is clear in this case. He explained clearly that he had representatives file the complaint for him. The marriage, I believe, was non-material, and he was truthful and straightforward about it and was never given an opportunity to respond to the I-589 application widower remark, as the justice has pointed out.
What's your response to the government's argument that you waived the changed country conditions issue by not adequately raising it in your brief?
Well, we would dispute that, first of all, because the country conditions report, which was the basis of the changed country conditions finding, as Justice Reinhart points out, holds that the corruption and human rights abuses continues.
That doesn't answer the question. Judge Tallman asked you, what's your answer to the government's assertion that you waived the issue by not raising it properly in your brief before the BIA?
Your Honor, I believe that the it wasn't waived in the brief before the BIA or before this Court. I believe that although not artfully stated, it was brought up that he continued to fear return to Armenia, and he testified to that. I believe it was briefed at the BIA, not artfully admit, I do admit, and it was briefed at the Ninth Circuit. And in Mamouzian, which was written by you, Justice Reinhart, I think this very issue of artfully bringing forward that issue.
Well, there's a difference between artfully stating it and not stating it at all. And can you cite to me where in your brief to the BIA that you actually raised the issue with regard to country conditions?
The petitioner was represented at the BIA pro se, and I would just point out that I think a general reading of his brief would indicate that
there are two places it's mentioned. Can you tell Judge Tallman what those two places are and
yes.
whether you think that raises it adequately? And then if you want to get on to a separate point that he's pro se and that that should be enough, but he asked you what the facts are as to where it is raised in the brief.
I don't have the BIA brief in front of me, but it's a very limited brief.
Okay,
I believe
we can look at
it. I believe the general feel is that it was stated in there and that he was a pro se applicant doing the best he could. And in the Mamouzian decision, this Court recognized that asylum involves issues where one potentially could pay for with his life if it's not granted. And I think the minor discrepancies or perhaps in artful or inarticulate way of explaining certain issues should be found in favor of the petitioner in this case, as was held in Mamouzian. And in regards to the changed country conditions, I believe this Court also has the right to take judicial notice of even the 2006 Department of State country conditions report, which state the same things are happening now. The decision in Mamouzian deals with country conditions reports, which find that the corruption, the political persecution, the political violence continues. And the government keeps pressing the issue that he was vague about his torture. He testified that after he was beaten and begged for water, he was asked to drink his own blood after having his nose bashed in with a chair. I don't believe that that is vague or ambiguous at all, and I don't think it supports the finding of the credibility determination here.
Thank you, counsel. The case just argued will be submitted. Court will take a brief morning recess.
Thank you.